I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Welcome to Raptors Love Everything for Yahoo Sports Canada. I'm your host, William Liu. Joining me on this special playoff preview, at least first round playoff preview podcast, is Vivek. What's up?
What's going on, man? Excited. I'm finally here.
Are you excited for Raptors Magic?
I mean, I'm excited to see if they can stomp them. You know what I mean? I feel like that's the only way they can kind of make a statement. I guess sort of erase those ghosts of the past. You know, if you get into an extended series, then all those doubts start to creep in again. But I think if you can just come out and perform to expectations, wrap this up in whether it be four or five and just be convincing in all the games, I think that's what I'm excited to see.
I agree with you in the sense that it would be very, very nice if the Raptors can take care of business really quickly. But I think you and I are both in agreement that this is kind of shaping up to a bit of an ugly series because the Magic they played really well of late. Like, I'm not going to stand here and trump up the Magic. That's probably going to be your job.
Yeah.
Because you're going to talk me into why we should be scared of the Magic. But just off the top, I got to say, like, first off, this is the playoffs. Like, you're not going to cruise through the playoffs. Even against a team that you're better against, you're probably going to struggle against that. You're probably going to have to maybe drop one or two games. And if that happens, like, just don't freak out, all right? Like, literally, the playoffs are supposed to be hard.
Right.
And the Magic are a decent opponent. Now, I've just skimmed over a portion of the Magic Raptors Magic scouting report that we're going to put out later today on Yahoo Sports Canada. But you tell me why the Magic might be a tough opponent in the first round.
I think because they can negate the Raptors' biggest strengths. When you look at what they're able to do defensively, they're really able to contest threes. They really limit shot attempts at the rim. Now, one thing that has sort of helped them, they've maintained that structure defensively all throughout the season. It's just that teams were really shooting the ball at a high clip when to the point where they were 20 and 31. But since then, since that point, they've gone 22 and 9, and all those numbers have sort of regressed to the mean. And so you're seeing the team. Now, are they a 22 and 9 team? I mean, that's essentially a 58-win season. Which is what the Raptors just pulled off. I don't think they're that good. But again, when you're able to, you know, sustain what was basically the number one defense since the All-Star break, so that's over 20-ish games, that shows you what they're capable of on the defensive end. And, you know, they just play very risk-free defense. They don't look to force turnovers. They look to stay solid positionally. They know they have across the perimeter, they have guys in Aaron Gordon, Jonathan Isaac, Wes Iwundu, guys that can just switch out. So that is something that they look to do. And then with Vucevic, they will look to drop the big at every opportunity. One thing that was really interesting as well was when they have switches between the point guard and any of the forward or guard positions, they're able to switch and then switch back very quickly as well. So I thought that was something that was very interesting. But yeah, mainly defensively is where they should be able to do some damage. I mean, the Raptors had their lowest offensive rating. Their lowest offensive rating came against the Magic. No other team held them to a worse performance efficiency wise than the Magic, so you expect them to stop the Raptors to a better degree than, you know, at least what you might have seen out of the Pistons or the Nets. Offensively, I do think, you know, you look at what they're able to do with the pick and roll, you know, that we've talked about dribble penetration and what needs to be done there. You know, Marc Gasol is largely going to drop as the big. And so if the Raptors can control that area and sort of make sure that Augustine isn't able to just pick out Vucevic at every opportunity, whether it's the pick and pop, whether it's the pick and roll, I think that's something that's really important. And then, you know, we've seen some hot shooting nights from Jonathan Isaac, Aaron Gordon, you know, again, the physicality of them being able to, you know, match up with the Raptors really well. We talk about, you know, the length, the flexibility that the Raptors have. That's where they do match up well with the Raptors. So, if there is a point of emphasis, again, it's the defense getting into a grinded out style type of game and then maybe squeezing out a result.
Yeah, for sure. Look, this is why I think the series would be ugly is defensively, right? The Magic are pretty solid, and I think they have kind of the personnel to make things difficult for the Raptors. We've already seen it throughout the season. Now, granted, well, two things, actually. One, I think the Raptors know better over the last couple of years that the regular season series matchup is not necessarily what translates and happens in the playoffs.
Right.
You know, obviously that Wizards series being the Raptors sweeping the Wizards in the regular season and the Wizards sweeping the Raptors in the playoffs. But, you know, the other thing is I just think the Magic are really well equipped to guard the Raptors' top two scorers, and we can go through position by position, but I think the biggest X factor for the Magic is Jonathan Isaac in this series, just because if I'm sketching a path to an upset, right, and again, I'm picking the Raptors in this series, you're picking the Raptors in this series, we're just kind of looking at it in terms of if you're Orlando, what is your path to potentially making an upset, and it would be a huge upset, but the path to that would be you got a guy like Isaac who guards Pascal Siakam really well. It's not just Pascal averaged 8.8 points per game against him this season. He had like 15 points in the first game of that series on 7-11 shooting. Decent game. That was around the time where, like, you know, Pascal wasn't fully in scouting reports just yet. You know, that was just in December. Like, he was kind of breaking up, but not really. But in the three games since, I mean, Pascal has just had such a hard time in the series. He shot 1 of 8 in game 2, 3 of 10 in game 3, and 2 of 9 in game 4. So Pascal's going to have a lot of trouble with Isaac, just because Isaac is very uniquely shaped to guard a guy like Pascal, right? He's, 7 foot tall, basically. He has a 7 foot one wingspan.
Yep.
And this is something we talked about after the last, you know, game where you and I got together for the Reaction podcast against the Magic, where the Raptors won that game on April 1st. But we talked about how you know, Pascal likes to feel contact from the defender, so he knows how to spin. And Isaac has done a really good job backing off. So, I mean, what do you think Siakam can do against Isaac? And if Siakam can't do something against Isaac, then where the Raptors go in terms of scoring? Because that's where the Magic might see, like, if we stop Siakam, we limit, you know, Kawhi to doing whatever Kawhi's doing, and we force the Raptors into a tough defensive series, that's where the Magic can actually do damage.
Yeah, I think in a strange way, we've come to expect Pascal on the ball so much where, you know, he even gets the ball out in transition and he pushes. But I think that actually helps Isaac pick him up, because Isaac is one of those unique defenders who can sort of keep up with him when he has the ball. So I think maybe if there's more potential for him to leak out without the ball, that's a way for him to get going. And then maybe just make Isaac work a little bit harder. As far as attacking Isaac goes, I think he's got to let the game come to him. I think this is something that Nick Nurse talked about as well. He shouldn't necessarily look to force the issue. The Raptors have so many offensive weapons where, you know, I think one of the things I noticed just from watching some tape was they're very happy for Siakam to go in the post with Isaac. They're very happy for Danny Green to go in the post with DJ Augustine. For them, that's a win, because it takes the Raptors sort of out of their free-flowing offense. If you're running post-ups for those guys, then they feel like they've won that possession, regardless of the outcome. So I think Siakam ideally should be looking for opportunities more in transition, more free-flowing, where he's getting the ball on the catch, on the run, and then maybe other things will open up for him. But he had some catch and shoot opportunities for three. I think that's going to be huge for him, the jump shot. We've seen his corner three shooting really, really improve. And so if that can give him some space, if that can sort of get Isaac to play him a little closer, like you said, Isaac's done a good job of backing off and making sure that, Siakam doesn't have, anything to play off of. If he can get Isaac to get closer to him, get that sort of inch of separation, and then you know, and then go finish at the rim the way he has all season, then I think that's the best way for him to go about attacking Isaac.
Yeah, for sure. I agree with you, man. I don't think he needs to force the issue as much in this series. Quite honestly, because I think Isaac is like basically uniquely shaped to guard a guy like Siakam. Right, first off, the Magic do a great job taking away transition points.
Yep.
Just as a team, they're really good at getting back, and so obviously that's where Siakam gets a lot of his scoring. You take that off the table, that's already like 5 points off the table. And then, as you mentioned, the one-on-one scoring against Isaac, I just don't think it's a good matchup physically because Isaac is bigger.
Right.
And even if you do get a shot off, it's not going to be a great shot. And I just think that it's not that I want Pascal to just like sit in the corner and only shoot threes, but I think this is a chance for him to show off the other portions of his game. Like if he can break Isaac down, get to the rim, draw a bit of help, and then kick, you know what I mean? Like that's something he used to do really well with Jakob Poeltl, for example, right? He would break down or he would cut, he would get to the basket, force help, and then dish it out to the dumping big. And so there's other ways to attack other than him just going one-on-one. Again, him in the passing on the post has been great against just about anybody in the league, but Isaac is very uniquely shaped in that matter. I do think that one of the I think, you know, this whole thing with Isaac, though, like we might be overthinking it just a little bit in the sense that first off, he's not going to play as many minutes as Pascal, right?
Right.
And he's a very young player, and this is his first playoff run, and he's not a very good shooter either. Like he's like an OG Anunoby level shooter of like
he's tricky.
He can hit a shot, but it's like whatever, we'll live with it, right? If he goes cold and if his confidence slips just a little bit, this could be the kind of thing where it's like, man, he's such a liability offensively that the Magic might need to take him out. And if I'm Steve Clifford, really the only option I have in terms of boosting my offense with that starting lineup, and if Isaac is not cutting it, is you slide Aaron Gordon to the four and you put Terrence Ross in at two, and you keep things the same. But if you do that, it's such a big sacrifice on defense. And I also, you know, watching through the tape of Pascal, one thing I know is he's actually very effective against Aaron Gordon. He can actually get it. You know, Gordon is very quick in terms of Aaron Gordon is very strong, and we'll talk about that in terms of like the matchup against Kawhi. But Pascal's jump off the floor, he's got a quicker jump than Aaron Gordon does. Even though Aaron Gordon is like a prolific leaper,
right?
He's not slow off his feet, but Pascal's just so quick off his feet that he can rise up and shoot over top. And so that's one of the advantages he has against Gordon. And so, you know, I think there's still going to be opportunities for Siakam to attack, but I just don't think that Siakam is going to be necessarily the number two option, especially him in the post when Isaac is out there. And I think as long as they keep that in mind, it should be okay. And I do think that, again, like as much as Isaac is a good defender, like I'm not even sure he can stay on the floor offensively just yet to worry too much about it. The other matchup I'm a little bit more worried about is Kawhi versus Aaron Gordon. Not in the sense that I'm worried Kawhi won't score. I think he's still going to get his averages and stuff, but again, this is one of those things where you got a guy in Gordon who's very strong, and Kawhi likes to bully wings. Most times he can do it. Gordon is too strong for him to bully, and he's not going to get a great shot off in that situation. There's even been a couple of situations this year where Kawhi's gone to the turnaround jumper. Gordon's blocked that turnaround jumper, which is really hard to do. So what would you do against Gordon in terms of if you're Nick Nurse and you're trying to get Kawhi some open shots?
In terms of getting Kawhi some open shots, I think you look for, you know, those switch opportunities to try, you know, dare them to make those switchbacks as much as possible. Maybe run pick and rolls, you know, the 1-3 pick and roll a little more often, where you can get maybe a DJ Augustine, or, you know, even if you can get Evan Fournier onto him, that can open up some opportunities. But again, I think the key for the Raptors offensively is staying committed to team ball and staying committed to staying in a flow. Because you look at this series, the way the Magic defend Kyle Lowry and Marcus Gasol, their scoring is going to be really important. Just staying attentive to their scoring opportunities when they're left open. Marcus Gasol, again, with the big dropping, with Vucevic dropping, he's got to be ready to pull that mid-range J. So I think that's something that Kawhi needs to be aware of as well, and sort of just trust Lowry and Gasol with the offense a bit more. And again, with Kawhi, with Pascal, I think they should be more, you know, in case of emergency, break glass kind of situations in terms of their post-ups and in terms of their ISO opportunities.
Yeah, for sure. And I think this is one thing where Kawhi has to really trust in, like you said, like Kyle to deliver from the ball. I think that 1-3 action is going to work really well. just because, again, Gordon is very athletic. He's a super athlete, really. But he's not that quick laterally either. And so there's been a couple opportunities where when you go through the tape, Kawhi's been able to use the handle to shake Gordon a little bit and blow past him and either get him off balance where, okay, then his strength isn't as much of a factor because he's off balance. For him to attack in that kind of area. But again, the whole idea is to get Kawhi into space, right? And I think the two ways, I think the most basic two ways you can get that to happen is, A, you have him screen for Lowry, or even Lowry screen for him, that's fine. Or you have Gasol screen. It's a set like a ball screen and just run a regular 3-5 pick and roll. Because, again, Gordon is kind of bulky, but like bulk kind of becomes an issue when you're trying to fight around a screen. And you have to fight around a screen because Kawhi can shoot.
Yeah.
So, and you know, the Magic play pretty conservatively, like you mentioned. Like, they'll probably drop Vucevic back. So, that elbow jumper, if Kawhi wants to get an elbow jumper, he shouldn't really try to face up and attack Aaron Gordon or whatever. He should really just try to get that high screen, come around it, get Gasol to erase Gordon from the play, and then get to the elbow area and shoot, because he's going to be open in that area.
Right.
And Kawhi's very good at it. So, like I said, ultimately, I'm not too worried about Kawhi getting his offense. I think he's going to score against almost everybody in the league. Really? Like, he's, yep. We're talking like top five NBA player, right? So, and especially playoff Kawhi, I do think there's a gear, but there's a smart way to attack Aaron Gordon, mm-hmm. versus the stubborn way. And I think in the regular season, like, Kawhi only averaged 18 points a game against the Magic. And a lot of that is because of Aaron Gordon stopping him in the post. So I think once they look over the tape, I'm sure Nick Nurse is going to, I hope Nick Nurse is going to run a bit more pick and roll for Kawhi to get open. What about a guy like Evan Fournier? He seems like someone who would annoy Raptors fans throughout the series, for sure.
Yeah, and especially because of the Magic's confidence, I think, to just put him on Kyle Lowry and say, you know, we know Lowry's not quick enough to get by a guy like Fournier, and he can, you know, he can chase him across screens all day, because that's exactly what he does on the other end. So I think that part of it might be frustrating, especially if Kyle isn't able to get going offensively. And you're looking at and saying, you know, how can Kyle not get his offense off against Fournier? So, in terms of offensively, again, it's the shot making. If he gets going from three, I think that's a danger, because now you've got him and Terrence Ross just really filling it up at the guard spots. DJ Augustine, honestly, looking at his numbers really surprised me.
He's been an efficient shooter, but he's like a Fred VanVleet type of shooter. You know what I mean? He's not going to create his own shot as much.
Yeah.
From three.
So again, I mean, what those guys are able to do in catch and shoot scenarios, I think that's where the real danger is offensively. When you look at the way they like to operate through Vucevic, if Fournier, you know, if you allow him to get going, he can be a consistent 20-point scorer for them in the playoffs. And I think he's got a sneaky ability to get to the rim as well. So I think those are the areas in which the Raptors have to be careful with him. Again, they have the personnel to watch out and defend and you know, snuff him out on all his, you know, potential scoring opportunities. But again, we talk about the one positive for the Raptors is that while they give up a lot of corner threes, the Magic don't really take a lot of corner threes. So that might cater to them in terms of being able to contest those, you know, those. Above the break threes, and kind of fit in with their personnel and their philosophy of what they like to do defensively. But other than that, you know, if the Magic do change things up and look to attack that area of the Raptors defense where it's like, okay, this is a team that does give up a lot of corner threes, we've got to look to create more of those looks. Fournier is definitely a guy that can hit them.
Yeah, for sure. I think, like, overall, the Raptors defensively are going to have no major issues with the Magic.
Right.
I'm just thinking about, like, the Raptors' offense. I think that is probably the bigger concern here against a team like the Magic. Mm-hmm. But Fournier is a guy that I think definitely will frustrate some Raptors fans. Honestly, if I'm Nick Nurse, obviously you got Danny Green right there, and he's a pretty good defender. But quite honestly, like, why not just put Kawhi on Evan Fournier and take away that thing, right? Because what the Magic really like to do is clear out the left side of the floor, have Fournier come up top off a screen from Vucevic, and either he's taking a three from there. That's his most prolific three-point spot, is basically that left wing three.
Yep.
Either do that or have him get into the paint, you know, usually there's not a lot of help defense on that scenario because, again, they cleared one side of the floor and either let him get to the rim. He's okay at the rim. He's not great. You know, he's not an athletic finisher by any means, but he has a floater and stuff like that. Either that or the defense overplays that, dish it off to Vucevic, who can go in for the layup. And, like, I'm thinking, you know, why not just put Kawhi there, right? Because, again, you have a guy who's super long like Kawhi. He can chase over the top, climb through the screen, and even if he gets hung up on the screen a little bit, he's got, like, a 7'4" wingspan, mm-hmm. and Evan Fournier is 6'4". So he could probably just reach over and still contest the three, right? Because your major concern is him coming off and getting that three off. So if you take away that three, and then you force, and then you get a scenario where, okay, Fournier decides not to take the three, he curls all the way into the, towards the basket. Then you got Kawhi chasing from behind. I don't really see him effectively finishing a lot of those plays. And again, if you have Fournier under control, then I think you can also you know, limit what Vucevic can do in terms of crashing the glass on the roll or just being a roll threat, you know what I mean? And so, I mean, you know, it's not like you can't live with Danny Green elsewhere. You still have Pascal who can guard Aaron Gordon. Aaron Gordon, offensively, he can put up numbers. He can score, but he's not like a devastating score by any means, right? There's not like one specific area he scores really well at, and you could put Danny Green on Jonathan Isaac, no problem. Isaac's not going to do too much there offensively. You could even put Kyle Lowry on Jonathan Isaac. I'm serious. Like, I know there's a foot difference, but, you know, Lowry's not going to let Isaac get to the rim, and he's going to take some tough floaters and stuff like that. And, you know, if you want to do that, you can even keep Danny Green on DJ Augustine, which I think has worked really well for the Raptors. So I think if you're Nick Nurse, you should probably just consider, like, look, listen, it's not that hard of a decision. You know, if Danny Green is getting torched a little bit, put Kawhi on Evan Fournier, shut off their main play, and, you know, just live with the Magic going one-on-one. Because if the Magic are going one-on-one against you, that team does not have enough talent to actually hurt the Raptors. What about Nick Vucevic? Obviously, he's leading the Magic in scoring. He's had an all-star campaign. He's also on a contract year, and he's played great. I think he really deserves to be part of the Magic long-term, although I don't know what you do with Mo Bamba in that sense. But my thing with Vucevic is almost like, you know how teams used to treat JV on the Raptors? And in terms of offensive, it was like, yeah, we can let JV score, honestly. Like, we're going to take away the easy baskets. Like, we're going to obviously not let him go to the rim all the time and keep him off the offensive glass. But for the most part, like, if JV gets 18 points, we're okay with that as long as we shut off the other options. And I kind of feel the same way about Vucevic.
Interesting. I think he's improved defensively this season. Actually, I think it's more of a schematic thing where I feel in general those plotting bigs have benefited from being able to drop more just because the shot spectrum of teams in general is so much more catered to the three-point line and the paint, where, you know, dropping the big just makes the most sense, and I think it helps them out. So I think Vucevic has benefited from that.
But so, I'm talking more like, if how would I approach Vucevic defensively from the Raptors?
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think in terms of defensively, you know, you're not looking at him as a shot-blocking threat. You're not looking at him as someone that is going to stay with you laterally. So I think in as far as that goes, you know, you've got Marcus Ole, again, who needs to be assertive in terms of recognizing his scoring opportunities. You've got Kyle Lowry. Like, honestly, if there's certain opportunities where he's got a bit of a runway to get to the rim, like, he just needs to go ahead and take it. And then, you know, try and force the Magic to collapse. I think one of the things I noticed is, you know, they're very adamant about protecting the paint.
They're almost like Bucks-like.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
and that's the Brook Lopez thing.
Yeah, and so they're just going to dare you to make that skip pass, make you make that great pass to the perimeter. And the Raptors have enough guys that can do that, that can make that read. So I think that that's probably the best way to attack him and attack the Magic. Mm-hmm. As far as offensively goes, you know, the one thing, because, you know, you can see that this is a really well-coached team. They seem to know exactly where they want to go on every possession. And the one thing that stood out to me is anytime they get a semi-transition opportunity, they will look to get Vucevic matched up on Siakam, on anyone basically that's not Gasol or Ibaka. And even Ibaka, they feel fairly comfortable about it. And
I mean, they should. He had his best game of the season. 30-19-8 against Serge Ibaka and Greg Monroe, who was, you know, randomly here with the Raptors.
Yeah. So I think that is something that the Raptors need to look out for. that attention to detail that the Magic have, where they will seek out mismatches at every opportunity, every semi-opportunity. That is one way that they look to get Vucevic going again, which is kind of a way that you look to get Siakam going, because I do think that Marc Gasol acquisition in terms of matching up with Vucevic should be really good for the Raptors. Mm-hmm. In theory, we didn't necessarily see it play out in that Feb 24th meeting. I think we saw it a bit more in the second meeting, and again, that's just Gasol getting comfortable, right? Like when they met the Magic on the 24th, that was just his fifth game with the Raptors, and you didn't have Leonard and you didn't have Fred VanVleet. So obviously it allows the Magic to do what they want to do, mm-hmm. Even better, right? So I do think this is where maybe you see the Raptors maybe take control of the series, where, you know, again, if you're able to negate the opposing best team, the best player on the team,
yeah,
then it just makes your job that much easier.
Yeah, but you know, honestly, my thing is, like, I don't even necessarily want to negate Vucevic. Like, I'm not trying my best to keep Vucevic to 15 points. Like, he's a big man. He's skilled. Gets in the right position. He's got good hands. He's gonna score. If he scores 20 points this game for the series, I'm okay with that.
Right.
What I'm not okay with is him getting on the offensive glass. Right. You don't want to see him bully the Raptors down low. So you got to make sure the wings, especially if they're caught on switches or whatever, box him out, because he is good on the offensive glass. And also just contain penetration to the point where, you know, you're not seeing Vucevic always get dump-off passes for layups. You take those two things away, you let Vucevic take the jumpers. I mean, like, he has shot a decent percentage from three, but, like, the way I'm looking at it is, like, how many of those threes can he hit, though? Right? Because, like, okay, so he can hit, like, 35% from three. But this season, his season high is 4 3-point makes. He did that once. That was in October. So everything else, it's been three threes. If he hits three threes in a game, good for you. The Raptors can actually deal with that. You can live with him hitting three threes, and that's probably like the top end. If he wants to shoot 12 threes in a game because the Raptors are, you know, taking away the paint, I'm fine with that.
Yeah.
Right? So you live with the jumpers for the most part. He's okay. He's pretty good at the elbows too, but I mean, again, that's like a 45% two-point shot. That's not necessarily what's going to break your back. So that's why I'm saying, like, I don't want to overreact to Vucevic. Like, I don't really want to sell out the defense to take away Vucevic. Hmm. Right? And again, going to your point of how you would attack Vucevic offensively, it's kind of the same thing. This is a little bit of a prelude to if the Raptors play the Bucks, right? Because in terms of schematically and also just the personnel, it's kind of like a baby version of the Bucks,
right?
Like a really baby version, but still, like, they got length across the floor, athleticism across the floor, and a center who is very big and stays home all the time. And so they will give up that pick-and-pop action, and that's where you have a guy like Gasol who, again, I'm envisioning Kyle Lowry running pick-and-roll with Marc Gasol. DJ Augustine's trailing Kyle Lowry, or Evan Fournier's trailing Kyle Lowry and chasing from behind, and Vucevic is backing up with his hand and just basically taking away the rim. Kyle needs to just throw that ball back out to either Serge or Mark, and they need to hit that jumper. That's it. Right. And we know Serge can do it. We kind of know Mark can do it. Mark just, you know, might decide to randomly pass and swing it into another pick-and-roll or something. But that open shot will be there. And I think the Raptors are well-equipped to handle that. So I'm actually, honestly, not that worried about Vucevic.
Interesting. I guess that's the one part where we probably differ, right? And I think for me, I look at it more from a psychological perspective, where this is their all-star, this is their go-to guy. Mm-hmm. And I think there is a value in the playoffs when you take away a team's best player, that they're starting to say, man, like, we got to get him going. We got it. Like, they get caught up in that stuff, right?
Yeah, I hear that. But I mean, it's like, how much are you willing to sell out to stop Vucevic? No, right? You're not going to double Vucevic for the most part.
I mean, it can go both ways, right? Yeah. Like, I'm not saying either one of us is wrong or anything, right? Like, it's just different views. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I think because when I look at the Magic, like, okay, you know, Ross is going to consistently be in heat check mode, and, you know, he's going to shoot every shot that comes his way. Like you said, you pointed out what Fournier is going to do on the left side of the floor. Augustine, you know, he's going to look to take those set jump shots when he can. And Gordon's going to look to rim run or attack and get opportunities, you know, maybe on some mismatches in the post. But yeah, Vucevic, I think there's a value for them in seeing him put the ball in the hoop. That mm-hmm. if you can take that away, then I think you start to get in their heads a little bit.
Moving on to DJ Augustine.
Yeah.
I don't think we have to talk too much about it. Like you said, he sets a table for them. And, you know, he can hit an open three at a reasonable rate. Like, he's like a Fred VanVleet, basically.
Right.
If anything, I think actually Fred might be better than DJ. But I think really DJ is going to hurt the Magic in the sense that he's so small.
Yep.
Like, we've seen it in the last game. Danny Green got 29 points in three quarters guarded by Augustine. Like, not only, like you mentioned earlier, like, okay, if the Raptors run their whole offense through the post with Danny Green, that's not necessarily a win. But you can definitely get like 2-3 chances a game where you just put Danny on the floor, put him in, you know, in the post against DJ, and they will probably help because DJ won't be able to stop him.
Mm-hmm.
And not only that, but I think even off the ball, he's not strong enough to actually like stay with Green. There's a couple possessions where I notice like it's not even the Raptors running screen plays or whatever. It's just Danny Green is like, yeah, I'm just gonna like push off a little bit,
yeah.
And he's not strong enough to actually stay with that.
Right.
Again, he's also kind of too small to then close out on a guy like Danny Green, who's like legit 6'6". So he's given up half a foot at least. I don't think DJ is even 6 foot.
Yeah.
Right? So, like, you know, I think Danny can get his offense against him, but I also think that, like, if Fred's in the game, he should attack, DJ, and so should Kyle. Now, I think the Magic are very help conscious in the case of DJ, and so they will bring a second defender to sort of limit whoever he's guarding. But that also means, again, that someone's going to be open, and usually that's going to be the big man. So I don't know. Is there anything else to really say about DJ Augustine, or should we just move on to Terrence Ross?
I think we move on.
Okay. and also, I think Orlando's backup point guards are trash. Like, just, you know what I mean? Like, they're just not very good. Like, Jerian Grant is not particularly good on offense or defense.
He had a surprisingly effective game. The one that they won in Toronto on a Sunday afternoon.
He's like DeLon Wright light.
But also, like, Jeremy Lin got a lot of minutes that game.
Wow. Yeah. All right. Every podcast I'm on, I catch strays about Jeremy. It's cool. I do have a bobblehead of him on my desk, so, you know, it is what it is.
In a Nets uniform.
Yeah. He was good in that 36 games he played with the Nets. And then MCW, who, like, he shot 16% from three this year and 33% overall.
Yeah,
he shot worse from the field than Pascal did from three. Like, right. You know what I mean? So even though MCW provides some defense, and I think, you know, it might be a tough matchup for Fred VanVleet to score on him, but again, that's also not too much of a concern for me. And so let's really talk about Terrence Ross, because the rest of the guys off the Magic bench are mostly hustle guys. Like, Iwundu is a hustle guy. He actually had a good game against the Raptors earlier this year where he made a bunch of jumpers, but he's also a bit of an inconsistent shooter.
Yeah.
And then Ken Burch is really solid defensively, got good energy, like a, you know, like a Canadian Biombo-ish. Not as athletic as Biombo, but he's carved on a nice career.
He can catch the ball.
Yes, he can catch the ball. That is important. Yeah. But really, the guy off the bench that you want to focus on is Terrence Ross. And, I mean, first off, what did you think of Terrence Ross when he was a Raptor? Just curious.
I mean, it was the inconsistency that frustrated me more than anything, right? Like, You saw the talent, like, especially if you looked at DeRozan the first couple of seasons that Ross was there, you could see the potential for Ross to be better, to be the starting shooting guard even, and, you know, elevate his career from there. But the inconsistency and, like, the discrepancy between what he was able to produce on the court and what you saw at times athletically, his jump shot.
That was that one game in 2014 when he shut down Paul George. That was like the height of the Pacers. Like, the Pacers were like the best team in the league.
Yeah.
And that was like the 2014 run, or like the start of it, where the Raptors finally got good in like December. And Terrence Ross shut down Paul George, and I was so gassed about it. But then,
what's with PG getting shut down by Toronto role players?
Wow.
But yeah, I think. Yeah, I think I was, after a certain point, again, you just lose patience with young guys who don't really figure it out, who don't necessarily, you know, seem to show that maturity that you want. And he seems to have found that in Orlando, so good for him. And maybe this is a role that's best suited for him, right?
Definitely.
Where, you know, he's coming off the bench as a gunslinger. On the nights that he doesn't have it, Clifford just goes somewhere else, and then on the nights he does that,
where else do they go, though? I don't know. Like, the next option is Ken Burch running pick and roll with MCW. I don't know, man. You might just have to go home. But
so
yeah. Terrence has been great, though. Like, of late, like, he's averaged 23 points in the month of April, and he's kind of shot the Magic into the postseason.
Yeah, I mean, I remember even watching that Celtics game recently, which I thought it was an impressive win for them because they had a big lead. But the Celtics came back on their home floor, took the lead, and then the Magic held on to win. Mm-hmm. So
not easy in Boston.
No, exactly. And Ross hit it. You know, he had a big three in that game. After the Celtics made their run, he had a block on the other end. Those are the types of plays that you hope to see in Toronto more often, more consistently. He's doing that now in Orlando. And yeah, there's definitely a confidence to his game now that, you know, he knows how to get to his spots on every night. I think one of the things that's interesting as well is I think the broadcast was saying in that final game that the Magic played the Raptors, so he's probably had more since then. He had like 25 three-point attempts where he's been able to draw the foul.
He's gotten really good at that James Harden thing.
Yeah, exactly. So that's something the Raptors will have to sneakily be aware of as well, that he likes to do that, stick his foot out a little bit. Yeah. And
we'll see if he gets that call in the playoffs.
And then I think one thing that also has stood out to me when Ross has been on the floor is as soon as he sees Norman Powell on he just wants to go right at him.
Yeah, they're buddies.
So, but you know, exactly, right?
I think Norm wants to do that to Ross too. So
yeah,
that's gonna be a fun matchup. I'm actually really looking forward to that bench.
Exactly,
matchup.
Right? So if he, you know, can take the Magic out of their offense a little bit with getting a little too hero ball there, then that I think works to the Raptors' strengths, because Norm, as we know, can be a solid defender. He's got the length, he's got the strength, and you know, in terms of chasing guys around the perimeter, that's something that he's pretty solid at as well.
Yeah, for sure. I actually think that Powell has a lot of advantages in this series, in the sense that, like, the way you would attack Terrence Ross, really, I mean, we've seen enough Terrence Ross, so we're pretty familiar with it, right? Like, Terrence Ross has struggled in the playoffs before. First off, let me just read you his playoff numbers. He averages 6 points a game, 36% shooting from the field, 29% from deep. Now, granted, this was when he was a 24-year-old. He has since matured. He is now, 27? And he's having his best season to date, 15 points a game with the Magic. So, again, this is Terrence Ross has obviously improved his game. But I don't think he's fundamentally different. Like, when I watch him, he's still very, like, hit or miss. And so, one thing that the Nick Nurse did in, you know, their win against the Magic earlier this month was they trapped and they blitzed Terrence Ross right out the gate. Mm-hmm. And they kept him from getting a rhythm. And I feel like Terrence Ross is one of those guys where he hits one or two shots, he's taking the next five, and he's taking increasingly difficult shots. And even though that sounds like a win for your defense, it's probably not. You don't want Terrence Ross to be aggressive. You want to discourage him early, and you want to knock him off his confidence. And I think because of how little talent is coming off their bench, right? Like I mentioned, like, who else is he going to be playing with, right? Like, again, okay, Ken Burch can dunk, but what else can he do? And, like, MCW, I don't even know what he can do, to be honest. And, you know, Jerry and Grant, guys like that, Wes Iwundu, like, I'm fine trapping and doubling Terrence Ross as much as possible and knocking him off this game early. And I think that's going to be one way. But I also think that the other way to play Terrence Ross is just be physical with the guy. You know, he doesn't want to play physical, right? He wants to rise up for jumpers. He wants to sort of sneak around, use his athleticism to close the gap. But he doesn't really want to be physical on either end of the floor. So you got a guy like Norm. Norm is really good at attacking straight line drives. Terrence Ross is going to let him do that.
Yeah.
And so you take it to him offensively and also defense. And also, I think Terrence, you know, he kind of falls asleep a little bit defensively.
Yeah.
You know, it's definitely a couple his priority is definitely scoring, right? So he definitely can fall asleep a couple times. And I think the way Norm has improved, especially in the last, like, 2 months, where he's gotten really good at coming around to the top of the floor, coming off a down screen, and then firing that three. He's actually gotten really accurate with it. He finished the year shooting 40% from deep. I think there's a couple opportunities where if he's getting guarded by Ross, you could have Norm come across the screen, and I think Ross will be late on that screen.
Yeah.
And I think he'll get an open shot. So I think I'm actually really looking forward to the Powell versus Ross matchup. But I think, you know, to be honest, you just blitz Ross. You live with whatever the rest of the Magic bench wants to do.
Mm-hmm.
And you take Ross out of his game early. And I think over the course of the series, I think Ross might be increasingly discouraged if he can't get his offense going. Because, again, it's not like Terrence Ross can adjust his game and start attacking the basket and creating havoc that way. He's basically mostly going to take, you know, jumpers. And he's really good at shooting. But you can also limit a guy like that. So, let's sort of look at the bigger picture. What's your prediction for the series? If I put you on the spot,
Raptors in four.
In four? What do we? What do we have this whole podcast? We had this whole podcast. You're telling me about the Magic being like 23-9 or whatever, and then all of a sudden you're telling me Raps in four. I'm gonna be more cautious. I'm gonna say Raps in I'm going to say Raps in five.
Okay. I think that's the most reasonable expectation.
But I can also, I think Raps in five is the most likely outcome. Raps in six is the second most likely outcome for me.
Interesting.
And you're saying Raps in four.
Yeah.
I mean, that's my third most likely outcome. But, you know, you don't think they'll drop a single game? You don't think they'll go into Orlando, into the, you know, Amway Center and, you know, whatever else happens, you know, that little the mascot that they have, Magic, Stuffed Dragon,
no,
whatever the thing
really,
is.
Man.
Puff the Dragon?
The load is being managed. You got, you play Tuesday and then you don't play till Friday. And then you got the Sunday game to close it out. I just think the Raptors' offense is really humming right now. I think defensively they're really going to key in on their principles, and you're going to really see a team that recognizes that, you know, they're looking to play 20-plus games this postseason, and so every bit of rest matters. And so I think they will come into every game with a killer instinct that maybe we haven't seen in years past, and take it one game at a time and really just get it done.
Okay, enough said. Now, before we end the podcast, we got to talk about how hungry are you. We have to. Because this Kawhi episode, I mean, you and I were both in the office watching it side by side, giggling. I mean, there's no way to watch this entire, like, 22-minute masterpiece without giggling. First off, you know, forget Pascal Siakam for Most Improved Player. We are officially on the Serge Ibaka for an Emmy.
Yes.
At least a Webby, right? But definitely we should reach for the Emmy because it is the best thing I've seen on YouTube all year.
The easily. Production value, season two.
Much better.
Has been incredible.
Yeah, much better.
And, yeah, right from the second Kawhi walks in, like, you can see the chemistry that they share, right? They're so comfortable with each other. They're clowning on each other. Yeah. I mean,
Kawhi insisting that he's from Cape Town.
Yeah, and, yo, and
like, it's so absurd. It's so funny, man. Maybe he is. I don't know.
And then Serge telling him that his swag is trash. Like,
yeah.
You know, there's obviously a comfort level between those two.
Kawhi saying that I can't answer who my celebrity crush is because it's too close for me.
Yeah,
and it being true is an incredible flex. Seriously, he's like, yo, I can't say like it's Halle Berry because, you know, I might actually get a text from Halle Berry. So. Or however Kawhi receives communication. Probably like, you know, email or like a
pager?
Mail.
You think he has a pager?
He might have a pager, yeah. Kawhi's definitely the type to have a pager for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So.
He's on that Stringer Bell playbook for sure. Yeah. It's like it's hard to contact him, man.
Randomly see him at a public telephone booth.
Yeah, you're like, what? Kawhi, what are you doing? Kawhi?
Oh, man. But yeah. I mean, I didn't think anything could top what he prepared for Kyle.
Okay, what did he prepare for Kyle? I mean, Kyle's a good sport. I'll say that much.
Which is worse? Which do you think is worse?
Kyle, definitely.
Yeah?
Because, you know what, though? It just, I mean, first off, it both of them looked weird, right? Like, you just don't see those cuts of meat ever. And then, you don't even see those organs detached, right? Like, you know what I mean? Like, you've seen in, like, a textbook, a liver, right? Or just drawn on its own.
Yeah.
You've seen, like, a stomach on its own. You've seen, like, intestines on their own. You've seen worms, whatever. Worms or whatever.
Yep.
You know? But you just don't see cow genitalia just, like, on its own. And when he just shows it that to you, you're like, that's crazy. But I think, I think what's crazy, a couple things. Obviously, one, that he fed that to Kawhi. I honestly thought that there might be a thing where he's like, he actually serves him a real meal this time.
Yeah.
Just because it's Kawhi, because he wants to convince him to stay, and he didn't do that. But also, he didn't even put salt and pepper on this.
Yeah,
he just served him like he boiled it and then he cut it and he put it on a pizza.
Yeah,
that's disgusting.
I thought he might like try to sneak it in and like cut it up and mix it in there and it's like no man, I'm just gonna put this big ass penis.
draped it on the top, man.
Shouts to Raptors fans who are clearly willing to do anything to keep Kawhi. I asked the question on Twitter, like, if I told you Kawhi would resign in Toronto, if you ate cow penis, would you do it?
Yeah.
And my mentions, you would not believe some of these mentions, man. There was a dude that said, I would do it with it still attached to the cow.
Okay. All right. I'm gonna put the explicit tag on this episode. I mean, yo, but for real though, like, you know, Raptors fans are out here. You're going to line up at Jurassic Park. It's going to be like 2 degrees outside. It's going to be sleet and stuff.
Yeah.
You're going to watch Kyle Lowry get outscored by Matthew Dellavedova. This is a memory I have. This is a direct experience that I'm recounting here. Yeah, if Raptors fans are willing to do that, I'm sure they go on How Hungry Are You for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. Kawhi's a good sport, though. Kawhi mentioned a couple things. He wants to come back for Carabana.
Yeah, that's
right?
Big.
Which is very big.
Yeah.
Right? B, he wants to go to Niagara Falls.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, the mayor of Niagara Falls quote tweeted one of my tweets about Kawhi wanting to go to Niagara Falls, and he said, he's very welcome to come. So there you go. You got the mayor to bring to the Tim Hortons that's like across from Niagara Falls that, every immigrant family has definitely visited at least 3 times in their lifetime. I think Kawhi just came across overall as really personal, though. Like, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
We just don't get to see Kawhi interact with anybody. And that's for a reason. He's introverted. He explained. He's like, listen, I'm on the court all the time. I'm already sharing a lot of my life with you guys. I don't really need to do more than that. And that's completely reasonable. And I feel like the way people get on Kawhi and make fun of him, it's like, there's nothing really to make fun about a guy if he just wants to be introverted, right?
Right.
There's no obligation for him to be on Instagram, on Twitter, whatever. If he wants to live privately, that's completely his option.
Yeah.
But now that you get to actually see him interact comfortably with another guy who he's obviously friends with in Serge, like, it was just nice to see his personality. Like, you really get to see that, like, this guy, he's a nice guy. He really is, right?
Yeah.
And he's personable. He is funny. He's like a weird, dry kind of funny, but he's funny.
Yeah.
And he was real chill about the whole thing. And he got asked about, like, straight up, are you coming back next year? He answered that.
Yeah.
Obviously he's like, yeah, I haven't decided yet, things like that. But, like, he just came across as really likable. And I obviously Serge has been mad likable throughout the entire series, but this has been Serge's best work as an interviewer as well.
Oh, for sure. And I think one of the segments that hit home with me was, Kawhi just talking about wanting to, get a house where, his mom can stay and mm-hmm. be happy. And, just seeing all the things that other people had growing up and wanting to give that to his family. And that's basically what it's been about for him. So you had Serge asking him about a burner account. It's like, he's like, dude, I don't need that. Like, everyone just tweets out everything about me anyway. You know what I mean? So,
exactly.
So yeah, it was cool to see that kind of swag too. You can see that he's just a fun guy.
No, for real. He is a fun guy, man. I mean, he took not one, but 2 bites of cow penis pizza. So,
only complaint about the penis just not being tender was hilarious to me.
Yeah, it was like, it was chewy or something.
Like, yeah, he was just like.
And then, the banter, though, like, the fact that Serge just kept coming at him with just, like, dry jokes was hilarious, Eventually, Kawhi's like, yo, stop saying that.
Yeah.
It's such a funny video. I'm sure everyone's seen it, but, like, go watch it again. Just watch it again. Why not? I mean, it's, like, literally the greatest piece of Raptors content we've seen this entire season, Like, the no-look steal, double block, Pascal having 44 points. I mean, yeah. Those are nice. But Serge feeding Kawhi a penis pizza is definitely the best content we'll see out of the Raptors all season. And, like,
I was looking forward to the Game of Zones episode. But after watching that,
I wasn't even close. No, in real life, Kawhi's out here doing this. And I can only imagine, again, the image of Steve Ballmer, who's been mad thirsty after Kawhi, Like, he even came up to Toronto to see Kawhi live, which is very rare for any owner to do. But, he's been mad thirsty about Kawhi. And the idea that this, like, multi-billionaire, one of the richest people in the world, is clicking a YouTube video, a prank cooking show, like, Chef's Table meets Fear Factor, basically. And he's watching this 23-minute video, and he's, like, probably the only guy who's not laughing watching Kawhi interact with Serge. You know what I mean? He's probably like, oh, my God, what's going on? I can't believe he's doing this. Look at the camaraderie he has with Serge Ibaka and with the Raptors. And
if you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet Plush Care, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I just like the idea of him breaking down and crying and as Kawhi admits to wanting to come back for Carabana, you know?
We're not,
because he can't just go to the Clippers and come back. I don't think it works like that. You know what I mean? Like, it's not gonna be the same love, not at all. So,
I mean, we're less than 24 hours into this thing, and it's got 462k views.
That's not enough, man. That's not enough. I'm telling you, this thing is gonna crack like 2 million, and it should. It should honestly appeal to any NBA fan. It's like, even if you're just a Raptors fan, like, it's just a hilarious video. Also, quick shout out to Corey Joseph.
Yeah, man.
I think he was drafted the same year as Kawhi. Him and Kawhi got close together because if you're rookies from the same class, you're going to spend a lot of time together.
Low-key recruiting.
And Corey Joseph's been telling everybody about Toronto. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. So shout out Corey Joseph, man.
Corey's one of the best, man.
I kind of want Corey back one day, for sure.
Yeah. Like, when he came back, when he came to Toronto and he wore the six, I mean, that was just...
Man.
That was amazing. Like, obviously, he's a role player, but, I mean, he did everything you could ask for of him, right?
Mm-hmm. Exactly. So, great episode. Of How Hungry Are You? We're going to look forward to the playoffs, and we will preview that. Obviously, we will have post-game coverage from all of the games throughout the playoffs. The post-game podcast will be here. Either it's going to be the live show that we will do, generally speaking. You know, we'll do game one. We'll see about game two, things like that. But if it's not the live show, we'll have the post-game reaction podcast right here on Raptors Love Everything. So please make sure to rate, review, and subscribe to the podcast. So you don't miss anything. So hopefully Raptors have a pain-free first round. We'll reconvene once the Raptors get to the second round. But you say 4 games. I'm saying 5. Hopefully the Raptors are saying the same thing. So for Vivek and myself, we're signing out.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.